Purpose isn't reserved for a chosen few. It awakens the moment you decide to answer your own call. This show is about inspiring you and helping you to remember that you also have a purpose.
I'm so excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I feel like we've done this before, but I don't think we have.
Maybe a couple times, you know, in different scenarios. You came and did Meet the Author at the store, and that was really cool. And so today, while we'll talk a little bit about your fabulous books, today I really want to talk about Fostering Hearts.
Amazing.
Because part of this YouTube show is really about helping people to understand what's happening in our communities and in what ways are we making an impact. And so I'm just really excited because the kids that you're serving, the young adults that you're serving, are just really getting something special because of you. And so I want to hear a little bit about what happened. What started this for you? Like, how did you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
I am a big kid. So once I heard and started researching about foster youth, I just couldn't sit in those stories for very long because I was so sad. There's a lot of ugly stuff out there that happens in our foster care system and for kids who end up in the child welfare system. And originally, I started Fostering Hearts in 2022, thinking I was going to keep siblings together and mentor kids aging out. But as I did the research and interviewed different social workers and things like that, I realized sometimes it's very hard to keep the siblings together, and they need a lot more therapies and things before they can come back together. And sometimes there's a lot of siblings in one house. And mentoring kids once they hit 18 didn't make sense to me because there's so much life before they get kicked out of the system, right? And so education kept coming up as a gap. So in August 2024, we decided to launch our education program for foster youth to close the gap because under 30% were graduating high school.
Yeah, and that's a significant number.
Huge. And, you know, that's a huge milestone for anyone, high school diploma, GED. And to know that there are young adults out there that don't have their high school diploma or GED because they didn't really know where to go, or they ran away from a system or a home or something that was unsafe for them, I don't feel like is fair. And I just love what I do. And I love the amazing, magical unicorn educators that I have who push this mission every day. And it's been crazy. August 2024, we launched and we've helped over 90 youth.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. But take me back to what interests you about the foster care.
Oh, so a couple good friends of mine told me about their journey in the system, and they're my age, they're 40. And I was like, wow, and realized that the system hasn't really changed a lot. Mm. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I worked for an adoption agency when I was in high school. So when I was told I couldn't have kids naturally, I watched a lot of adoptive families go through a lot, highs and lows. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do science. I'm not going to do adoption because it was so much emotion. And I didn't know about fostering. Because it was adoption. It was private adoption. And I didn't know about the foster care system. So when they were telling me, I was trying to link up. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many children that need to be adopted. But a lot of people don't have the resources or are able to help a lot of children who have so much trauma.
Yeah.
And their kids, like, we have trouble holding our emotions. So imagine a child who is managing adults that are unhealed. And it's just a lot. I just can't. I'm an empath, so like sitting in sadness for too long, I'll be in it forever. So I need to create solutions. There's a creative solution. So that was it. And then I collaborate with other nonprofits who do the work because better together.
Yes. And I'm excited because I know that you're collaborating with a couple and at least, yes, I'm so excited because we're also going to have her on the show.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's one of my favorite people to collaborate with. She works with aged out foster youth and we provide the GED program for those young adults. And she provides so many other avenues, resources, but we're just really there to build their self-worth and remind them that anything's possible.
So what were some of the challenges getting started for you?
Reminding people how important it is to invest in our youth, to pour into our youth. Like, you watch people's eyes glaze over when you talk about children. And, you know, it's usually the people that want to give back to the environment or dogs. And I'm like, all for that. But I like to like switch that around and be like, well, if you educate children and pour into them and their self-worth, they then in turn will treat the environment better and foster more dogs.
That's a great way to turn it around.
But it's very hard. Fundraising is always hard.
Yes.
Especially because people want to give back. And sometimes people just want a day to volunteer and take a picture and tell everybody that they're doing something. But that's not what we're about. We're about consistency and showing up for our youth. So it's kind of reminding them that you had somebody or you didn't have someone. And we're trying to be that person for the youth.
Can you talk a little bit about what are the challenges that these children are facing?
So,
and how does fostering hearts make a difference?
Yeah. So, a lot of the challenges, they're called ACEs, they're adverse childhood experiences. And a lot of them have experienced maybe more before the age of 7 than we will in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And
those are the formative years.
Yeah. And that affects their brain development. So sometimes their behaviors or emotional regulation or the capacity to learn is slower. And a lot of times they get pegged as like bad kids in the school system or with their group homes or with their foster families. But that's not it. It's more understanding and showing up for kids even on their bad days. And that's probably the biggest challenge. We work with sexually abused, physically abused children. We also work with young adults that have run away from bad environments, aged out youth who have been homeless for years. And we have some kids that have moved 40 times in a year, some who have moved 100 times in a year. So to expect a child to be able to learn in a new school when they didn't get to bring their favorite blanket with them that might have been in their locker, or they lost connection with their favorite teacher that you had with them that was finally, like, it's just...
Finally making an impact by connecting in a way that makes sense for that kid.
Yeah. So we work with, you know, just the days that they are having a bad day. It's just saying, hey, you're really special. And just reminding them that we believe in them. That's why I say I'm Ted Lasso.
I love when you use that reference. So for those people who don't know about Ted Lasso, talk a little bit about that connection that you have.
Yeah. He is an American football coach who goes and coaches soccer in England. And his whole mentality is making the men he coaches better men, in turn showing up for their team better and becoming better players. But he focuses on the whole of the player rather than just the game, and believing in them and teaching them life lessons and reminding them that they're special. And that's my whole thing. I always tell people the goal of our program is really self-worth. And we even shift how we say, not we're so proud of you. We say, aren't you proud of yourself?
Mm.
Because, you know, nobody knows unless they've gone through it what it feels like for a parent to either neglect you, do harmful things to you.
And the people that are supposed to take care of you, provide for you, love you, show you kind of like how to navigate life.
When they're not there at all, like what you're going to be fighting for the rest of your life. And I always say we are providing a support system they didn't really expect to have. And we look a little different than what they expected, but we're going to show up. So we do. My educators are the ones that are making this happen.
So let's talk a little bit about your educators, because I remember the first time we had a conversation, like that just really lit you up. And granted, they are the folks that are providing, which ends up helping these young kids. And how old are the young people that you're serving?
6 years old to 27.
Okay.
So far. We do school age rather than before. Like, one was 5, but she got moved right away. But I say 6 to 27 has been our constant age range.
And so I remember they're getting the end benefit, but the people that you're calling in and attracting are pretty special. You call them
my magical unicorns.
Yes.
I love teachers in general.
Yeah.
I think a good teacher changes people's world. Like, it just is such an impact, and teachers always run on purpose. I don't think we're great to teachers in the system. So the fact that they keep doing what they do for the kids, and that's always top of mind. So it's crazy to think last year, 2024, we had one educator, Miss Liberty, who started this whole program, our Safe Classroom. And then Miss Jill and Miss Tatiana, April 2025, started our GED program. And now we have 7. So we have a Miss Susan, Miss Tatiana, Miss Jill, Miss Liberty, Miss Sarah, Miss Jessica, Miss Donna, Miss Stacy. I'm sorry, we're eight. And myself, I always go in and sub. But we've had other helpers along the way too. So they make this mission run. I told them what we were doing. I said, I don't have a game plan. You know, teachers are very organized. And I was like, this is your, like, you take the power of your room, like your kids, these are your kids. Like you handle what they need and just let me know what you need.
But there's, I want to call it a secret sauce or a special sauce or something about what you've imparted to them about the importance of consistency mm-hmm. and how they show up. So I hear you that you've given them autonomy to come into the classroom and really mm-hmm. do it the way that they see fit. But I feel like there are some very important things, for lack yeah. of a better way of saying, that you're expecting that are showing up. That is what makes
sense. Well, yeah, I just tell them just continue to show up and create a space so that you don't ask them if they missed a day where they were or why they didn't show up, but you just show up for them. And one of our teachers with the older youth has created such a bond with so many of them. They'll reach out and say, oh, I'm sorry I missed today. Don't worry, I'll check in on Thursday. And, you know, you just see how quickly she's able to create a safe space so they can rely. Because, you know, a lot of these young adults have never had an adult they can count on. And people don't realize how important that is because we've all had one. I can't see people are like, were you a foster youth? I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, okay, someone in your family is a foster youth? No. I just can't grasp why we think a child understands how to navigate life without one consistent, supportive adult. It just doesn't. And they'll just be like, they'll get it. Oh, 18? Yeah, let's do a resume. Of what? What are we doing a resume of? And you're kicking them out. And then they have to decide if they stay in a system that never served them or they continue in, like, they leave. And then they become homeless within probably the year. And other communities along with that. So it's like, I'm just confused at why society thinks the child welfare system is like a profit game. Like, absolutely not. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Make it, please make it make sense. Yeah. Right, so how, what is that process for you in terms of that clarity on who those people are that are going to serve?
So I tell people all the time, this is like the easiest job of staffing because I used to run sales teams. Oh my gosh, motivating sales people from all different backgrounds and all different ages and globally and not like, wow, that was exhausting. But telling someone our only mission is to show up for these kids, help them navigate where they need support. If you can be the layer of support and showing them that there are people out there that care, are you good with it? And they're like, oh my gosh, this is what I long to do. This is the best part of my day. Easy. It's hard. It's just all, I'm a heart-led person. I will always be a heart-led person. And I tell people like 5 years ago, Katie probably couldn't do this work because I didn't fully grasp who I was or I was iffy, you know, like when you're just not sure. But I know who I am and I know the people that can continue this mission. And I tell people I want one of the youth who have been in our program to take over this program eventually.
Yeah.
Who has seen it firsthand, what it's done for them to take over and build. Because it is really powerful when foster youth hear from Asia foster youth.
Yes.
Like it's, absolutely. They are like, wow, I'm seen.
It's powerful.
It is.
It is powerful. And so the way that you're serving is by helping to have that consistency that your educators are meeting them where they are and they know. What else do you think is part of the mix for you that helps these magical unicorns continue? Because one of the
things that
okay.
I think everybody wants to be acknowledged. And it's funny because teachers are always like, no, I don't need this. I don't need that. I'll do, you know, and you're just like, no, you are appreciated. I appreciate them so much. I'll just send thank you cards because they'll be like, wow, Katie, you do a lot during the day. Yeah, I'm kind of like a case manager right now because I am the whole admin team, but I'm okay because you all are running our mission. And I don't think they realize that. Just remind them a lot.
And that's a beautiful thing because one of the things that I know is that, yeah, a salary and those kinds of tangible are important.
Yeah, we got to pay.
But at the end of the day, what you just said in terms of appreciation just goes, like, that's what makes you feel that you're valued, that you're making a difference. And I'm sure that they also get rewarded by the things that the kids do or say. Can you give me some examples of?
Yeah, I know that one of our aged out foster youth told one of our educators just like, thank you, and hugged her. And that was like a game changer that day. Or the day that one of the youth for me was having a really bad day. He punched the wall. He's 9. And I told him, I was like, you're not a bad kid. I said, let me know when you want to read. I will be here. And you're not a bad kid. You're special. And we got outside to play basketball, and he ran up to me and he goes, Coach Ray, I'm sorry. I got mad in there. I go, no, no, you're okay. That's okay. And he said, but I know I'm special. And I go, you're not a bad kid. And he goes, yes. And then he ran off. But I was like, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Or when they run up to you and they're like, we haven't seen you. We missed you. Like, you know that they're wait. You know, you don't want to.
You've made an impact.
Yeah.
Because if you're not there, they're.
And they see a lot of adults.
So where it's interesting, because as you were talking about this young man, there was this part of me that's like, where do they get the peace? Because I know what you're saying. It's important to not focus on the behavior. Like, you're doing something different. And yet, even with me, one of the thoughts that I had as you were saying that is, but where is the teaching of, you know, we don't punch the wall when we're angry. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you see
that? Teacher already told him that. I just followed.
Okay.
She told him to go in the library after he punched the wall. And I was in there and I said, you're not a bad kid. She said, we don't punch the wall. Go take some breath. And then we bring in breath work. I called the dude crew, Mr. Michael. He teaches them breath work and emotional regulation. And a lot of them haven't had a lot of positive male role models. Some of their staff is fantastic who are males. Males and females in the group homes. But Mr. Michael is a trauma-informed yoga instructor, breathwork specialist, veteran, and he just shows up and shows how masculine and feminine should be together and emotional regulation of breathing, not rage. And that's providing them with the tools. They don't know anything else.
Yes.
You know, the punch into the wall was probably what they saw at home.
Yeah.
So it's really just undoing that. And yes, it is the educators don't allow for that behavior and they let them know, but that's why he was moved to the library part of the room to not distract the other children too.
So that he could find a quiet space to self-regulate and figure out like what's the next thing. I love that. That's pretty special because I mean, I've worked with behavioral health kids for a long time and in the IDD world. And so I have a sense of what work that you're doing and the different pieces that are not normal for what happens. And I'm just so, it just makes my heart feel good that you've created this safe space. Because so many, like in the group homes, like staff coming in and out, like there's lack of consistency in their world. And so the ability to create a program where they're seeing the same people, they're being treated the same way. And it's really focused on who they really are, not the outside.
Yeah. And people don't realize how routine is just so important for kids. You know, if they're always in chaos or if they always feel like they don't know what's next, or it's a lot for us. Oh, we don't have a routine. Like when we're on vacation, we come home, we're like, oh, it feels good to be on routine again. Because it does. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, spontaneous fun adventures are amazing, but it's really important for kids to feel some type of security with consistency and routine. And that's why we try to, and even over the summer, our main educators might be off, or they'll just go down to maybe 2 days a week or 1 day a week, just so they continue to see us. But a lot, you know, so they also, our educators get breaks too. So, but they see them still, but not just on that consistent, like a school year. And the kids deserve a summer too. They have such a gap in their education. They need
to be down their education. But I'm sure, just like most programs, there's a slight difference in terms of how much. Like, there's more fun things to do during the summer.
So they have activities like that, which is
the curriculum changes a little bit.
Yeah, we just focus on reading usually. But I think it's. Just our program in general is working. we just need to be able to scale it quicker because of the need. And we're going to add mental health by the end of the year to add a wraparound service. Because you learn better when you're mentally ready. But in the system, there's a lot of turnover. So you have to remember they're reliving their story again and again when a new person comes in.
Yeah.
But yes, some of their programs are consistent and some aren't. We've noticed how different every day can be if they're not on a consistent mental health program. And sometimes through the system, they'll say the case doesn't warrant for mental health. And I'm like, I'm not a professional, but I feel that I need therapy after you telling me she got pulled out of the house. So, you know, I think people forget that a home, whether you think it's toxic or not, was still their home.
Yeah, just the loss, the separation.
Those are things that affect you when you're a kid. I think it's a blessing and a curse to work with so many like professional people in the atmosphere of just like human wellness. Because I'm just like, again, make this make sense. Like, I feel like, am I the crazy one right now? Because that child deserves therapy once a week, maybe even twice. It just blows my mind that we are not putting more resources to child welfare system. Because in turn, that leaves the, like, not just legacy, but the generation behind them better and educated. Sure. And, but, you know, all that.
Well, for me, that was, you know, a part of why I wanted to create the show is so that more and more people understand that there is a way to make an impact. Yes, do we need our systems to be relooked at and improved? Absolutely. But in the midst of that not happening, what can folks do that really addresses the need?
Yeah, and so even advocacy. I always tell people one thing you can do is get me in front of more people so I can open people's eyes to what's happening. The stats are crazy. Educate, you know, we have a 24-year-old with 3 children under 4 and is pregnant. We're here to support her wholeheartedly, but I'm assuming education was lacking somewhere there, and security and stability and safety and all of that. So why wouldn't we pour into her? And then you have people like, well, can she get a job? Or she's working off the system. And you're like, I'm sorry, have you had 3 under 4? It's also that. But do you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, but we failed her somewhere in her childhood where we didn't provide resources.
So yes, let's provide resources so that she can have the life that she can have, like the ability to do that. But to your point, the lack of that to begin with is why you're doing what you're doing.
Yes.
So that these kids are getting what they need earlier so that they can make different choices.
And it's really just pouring into them. You know, I think as adults, we every morning we wake up and have to do our routine to remind ourselves who we are and what we're capable of and the magic that is us. Like, we expect a child to do that without knowing what they don't know, or opportunity or access, or
yeah, because they don't know that that's even
their
option.
Yeah.
I love it because you're giving them such a sense of self and that they matter.
Yeah.
That they're special.
We had one get her GED and she already got a full-time job at Wendy's and we're looking at other opportunities, but she went full-time so that she could just start making money and wants to save up for an apartment because she's homeless. Like, yeah, there's something once you hit like a milestone and you're like, wait, I can. And you're like, what else can I do? And then you keep looking and then you have the support of us. And yeah, it's cool.
It is very,
it's crazy.
It's cool.
It's crazy over here.
I love it. I love that you're doing this work. So from a nonprofit standpoint, what are some of the challenges that you face?
A lot of like negative. So when you like apply for grants, or this is all a new world for me too. So this is fun. We're talking about it. Nonprofit. I used to sell software technologies and run teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is just so much harder because you're trying to get people to understand why it's important to pour into our youth in a way where I'm like, can you give me a check? You know, so it's just like a different, I'm not sure how to explain it, but people don't understand the importance of helping the next generation coming up.
What do you think that's due to?
The constant instant gratification era and what do I need? What do I need? What do I need? Material things. Just not understanding that giving to others is a way to happiness and serving others and not giving like money or maybe time, just being a support layer for others. And, you know, like there's a Mr. Rogers, you know, look for the helpers. But I'm like, or be the helper. I always think, I don't know if it's because I was the youngest watching my siblings and parents help. My mom was a teacher, my dad was a nurse. So like they were always, but I just don't know where I got it from. I just got it as a child. And you'll ask my friends since like third grade, they're like, oh my God, you came and said hi to me and made sure I felt welcome. I don't know where I got it. It just makes sense. Like you help other people and not where you lose yourself, but it just changes life. So with nonprofit, it's hard to like be in rooms where people don't put humanity first. You know what I'm saying? So that's been hard for me because I'm very vocal and some might call me aggressive. Some might call me passionate, whatever word you
use.
Definitely aggressive. I think it's
assertive.
Yeah. Like fundraising is always hard because there's like negative. I want to fundraise to pay my teachers. Oh, that's overhead. Why is that not? That's still a business, like an organization. We have to, what? If everybody volunteered, they're going to burn out in like a year.
Exactly.
So like for me, I'm like, what?
So there, it sounds like there's just a huge amount of education that is part of what you're needing to do to help people get the whole picture.
And I get it because I used to think that, or they bring up like Salvation Army and the CEO makes this much and the people in the front lines. And I'm like, I was just concerned that the people in the front were volunteering and not getting paid where they stand outside all day. The CEOs, we have very large organizations that call us for help, like very large organizations, like agencies that house children, and their CEO makes twice or triple our budget. So in my head, I'm like, why are you calling us for GED when you guys have more than enough resources? I don't ever turn them down. I'm going to be first and foremost. That's our mission. But it just blows my mind that there's been so much gray area in nonprofit and, you know, that's why we can't have nice things. People always ruin it for other people. So there's a lot of education around who's doing the grassroots, but also they also need your help fundraising and getting grants and getting approved. And we've been denied so many grants. And I'm like, I'm not a grant writer, but okay. It's a lot. It's very stressful. And I always joke, if you don't look up to go back to your old corporate job at least 3 times a month in nonprofit world, are you even in nonprofit world? If you don't cry on the way home, how are you really doing the work? So, but it's worth it. I tell people that all the time. I'm not going to stop. I can't.
And so what continues to drive you?
Love giving people a chance to see that there's more to life.
So what would be some examples? Like the young lady
that
finished her GED and is now working full time so that she can save money for an apartment.
Yeah.
Is she currently homeless?
Yes, she is. And she's 20 years old. Amazing human. And then I have a 24-year-old mom who I hype up every time I pick her up and watch her 2-year-old when she takes her GED. And I remind her, you're worthy. She's always in her head. She self-sabotages. That's what drives me. And I'm telling my kids, like, you do have 2 hands, and one's for serving yourself and one's for serving others. Like, that's how life is. And this is what you're going to do. And mom's going to go do this today. I am a mom first, always. But if you want to come with me, you can. And you can hang out with grandma, you know? But it's reminding them, like, you're a bunch of different things in life, but you get to show up as yourself in those environments. And I get to be me and pick up a kid or young adult and say, hey, you're awesome. I'm so excited to drive you today.
That's so cool. I think the other piece that I want to focus on is this whole idea that when we give and when we serve, yes, it's providing for somebody else. But can you talk a little bit about, and you mentioned it slightly, what that does for you?
How it makes you feel?
For you or just in general, whole idea that the more that we can help others, that there is a piece that we get back.
I mean, people are going to give to you. I think we often are stuck in the fast-paced life. What's next? What's next? And we don't sit in the moment and say, wow, we did this. And humility is a part of it. I've had to, you know, I'll leave a meeting and I'm like, oh my gosh, we've helped over 90 youth. Oh my gosh, that's awesome, Katie. And I'm like, way to go. Because some people are like, oh, you don't want to sound like you're bragging. What am I bragging about? We're helping others. I hope everybody else does it.
Just people.
But it's also like, why wouldn't it be? I want this to be contagious. Just like I say, I want other states to take on this program when we have like a very stable foundation. You can just like pass it to the net. Why wouldn't you do that?
Right.
I know everybody wants recognition and things. And yes, it feels great when one of the youth texts me after and is like, thank you. And you're like, yes, nailed it. But it just feels really good to help other people because everyone in their life at one point was really down. Mm-hmm. And you had that one person just remind you who the F you were. And you're like, wow, thank you. If you can be that for someone else, it just feels right.
But I think that I also want to just anchor in this whole idea of the importance. Like you're tying it to these youth and even yourself in terms of acknowledging what you have accomplished. And I think that for all of us, that's a really important piece. And it gets a bad rap in terms of, like you said, being arrogant or being selfish, just we're focusing too much. But that's just part of being a good human, is to acknowledge what contributions you've made or what you've done well. Because it's so easy. And I think we're always trained to focus on what we didn't get done, what didn't happen, instead of really understanding, look at how much. So I have a to-do list, but at the end of the day, I've started to train myself to write down, what did I accomplish?
Yay, it feels good.
It feels good. And it starts to retrain your brain to look at what is positive instead of what's missing.
Yeah. And I think that's it, right? People are always chasing happiness. Like, do we need a yacht? No. Unless you're bringing the foster youth on the yacht. Is that mine?
Is this like the pause? This would be the pause? That would be the pause. We're at this place. Okay, note to self. Turn off all alarm.
I think often people are chasing happiness, but if they would stop for a second and help someone else, they wouldn't have to chase it.
Yeah.
And I mean, looking at someone at the park and saying hello. Someone's acknowledged, someone feels seen today. Wow, that's huge. And I mean, going to a food bank or feeding someone who you saw that might need a meal. Not judging anyone, just handing them a bag of hygiene items. I don't think people stop for a second and know that the simplest act of kindness could change their day and especially someone else. And no one really, you know, they're chasing the next big paycheck or I don't live on the water yet. I'm not happy yet until I live on the water with a walk-in closet and this. And you're like, but why don't you go help someone today and stop chasing something in a material form, which we all do. Or until I lose this much weight, I'm going to be happy. So, constant chasing. Where if you just stopped, told another woman how beautiful she was today. I compliment
people. Acknowledging like where you are in this moment.
Yeah.
So
a lot of trouble doing it for themselves.
Yeah.
We just do.
So what I'm hearing you say is that maybe by doing, getting into the habit of doing it for others, it helps you to at least get started. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately.
Yeah.
Because I think that you're right. One of the things that I work on with my clients is like, where are you right now? And how can you be grateful for what is happening? Because the other part of it is that we're talking about is present moment is what we have. Like that chasing of the house on the water and all those things, that's like out there.
Yeah.
Like, not that it's not real and you can't achieve
it. Of course.
But the fastest way is by being happy with where you are in this moment.
I tell my kids to be present. And they'll just be like, what? I'm like, you keep asking when we're going to do this or when we're doing that. Just enjoy being together. But they don't like grasp it yet. And sometimes I'm like a little aggressive. But it's just like sitting in the moment because I will sit and just watch them play. And I'm like, gosh.
That's a really important.
Or I tell them to call me out if I have my phone out. And I don't yell at them. I'm just like, cool, you're right. I was answering an email. I'm not going to phone.
Yeah.
And I don't put it on them. But I tell them, like, don't ever feel bad about calling your mom out if I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, my son does a really good job of that lately. He's like, mom.
You're not listening.
Yeah,
that's okay. And that's human. So it's like, as long as you give a space to call it out.
Yeah. But then, you know, taking responsibility and being able to acknowledge that you're right. I was on my phone, distracted.
Exactly.
Exactly. Great. So any other transformations that you want to shout out?
No, I think, our big focus is reading. A lot of our kids have gone up 1 to 2 reading levels just from consistency. People know the power of reading. We're in a bookstore.
That's right. That's important. So I want to talk a little bit about leadership and growth and community for you. What leadership qualities have you leaned into most as Fostering Hearts has grown?
My leadership quality of educating people when I'm in a room and not like talking at them, receiving feedback and giving feedback in a constructive way, and just being welcoming and my energy.
Well, I think the other part of it that I certainly recognize with you is that you're the example. You walk the walk, yeah. Talk the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody that is within close proximity gets to see that in action, which is a really powerful thing. Like that's one of the things that I agree.
Yeah, I
like about you.
Yes, I like to show up as a real human. Like, I think it's really important so that people can show up as real humans.
Yes.
And then we can tell who are the good humans. I'm just kidding. but it's more, I just enjoy that about me. And, you know, you're often seen as too much when you're younger, when you show up as real. And you're not, like, conforming to the, but I don't care.
But I think even as adults, they do that. I'm excited about the fact that I think that there's this fabulous word called authenticity. That I think more and more people are recognizing that that's really what it is, and more open to people not showing up the way that they're supposed to.
My brand, or yeah, I hate that. I'm like, oh, I'm probably not good for your brand. You don't want to. I curse a lot. You don't agree with me. But I just, yeah, I'm very big on that, and I'm okay with people not liking me. Usually, the people that don't like me aren't secure with themselves, and that makes me sad. I've lost friends from it. But I'm okay with it. I think my old people pleaser self wasn't okay with it, because you leave like, what did I do? What do I need to change? But now in that space, it really feels good to love yourself. It just does.
Well, you know what's so funny about that is that I think that if I were to think about why is it that somebody would be threatened by that, is because they haven't gotten to the place where they really can show up fully. And so you're kind of showing them the mirror of what's possible, and that's uncomfortable.
Scary. That's why I like the rooms where I'm.
Absolutely. So in terms of doing this work, Katie, how do you balance the emotional weight of this work with your well-being, personal care, like the things that you have to do in order to be able to show up every day the way that you do?
Yeah, I said earlier, like 5 years ago, Katie probably going to do this work. Well, it's more like 7 years ago, Katie. But I'm huge on mental, you know, I tell everybody I work out now for bikini season, so I don't fight people on the street. And
say that again.
I work out not for bikini season, but so I don't fight people on the street. Because I feel like there's a lot of horrible things in this world.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get blinded by all of it and you don't remember all the good and like the superheroes in the background. So that I would be very like rage and frustrated and take that on with me. And then the stories I hear from the kids when they do get safe, it's a lot. But I know of all like the superheroes in the background doing the work. You know, we have some on our board. You know, it's just knowing that there are people out there fighting for kids. But I read, listen to good music that uplifts me. And I make sure to separate like when I'm with my kids, giving them attention. And letting them know our mom needs a moment. Our mom is sad today, but sadness and joy go hand in hand. So just, you know that being real to them and being vocal.
And again, modeling for them.
Yeah, that's okay. To cry and then smile through, I guess. Let me cry this out.
Is there a difference in terms of how you show up for your kids versus the young adults that you work with?
No.
Okay.
No. And it's funny because I brought like my youngest to one of our 8th like GED program, and I'm sitting there talking in front of them, and she's like twirling on a chair, and then she's like, I'm bored, like because no one was paying attention to her. And I go, okay, well, we're talking, like just because you're bored. She's very vocal. But I bring Jade, you know, we went to an event with one of the group homes, and I brought my oldest to hang out. But no, I mean, I get to touch my, like hug my kids more. We allow hugs with the kids, but you have to really, there's a fine line, right? Some of these kids will be much abuse, so you have to be like personal space. But with my, that's the difference.
Yeah.
I get to cuddle and just hang.
And you said be more physical, where you have to pay more attention.
But the way I talk to them, respect, love, like it's always in a pour through. I'm like an aunt, I would say, when I'm with the foster youth.
Okay.
And I agree, like the cool aunt that also disciplines, so also kind of make sure they're learning while they're, like my oldest sister is with my kids, basically.
Setting boundaries. But
on the other hand, just really being fun and just like meeting them where they are.
And you know how kids with their moms always try to get away with more stuff? Could the foster children. So that's why I'd say more like it,
Yeah. It sounds like a cool place to be.
It is.
So in terms of people in our audience who want to support foster youth, what are the most meaningful ways to get involved? I mean, the ones that come to mind are volunteering, donating.
Technology is a big thing. Access. Being a mentor. We partner with Maddie's Movement for their mentorship program so people can mentor. Being that supportive adult. Using your skills and talents to better someone else's life. So if you're really good in an industry, like teaching youth about that, maybe time management skills, goal setting, vision boards, like cool stuff. Again, people don't realize access. Like give them access to something that they've never seen before. I had a field trip to the radio station. These kids were like, wow.
Yeah.
What is back here? You know, all they do is hear the people on the radio. They don't know how
it works.
You know, just stuff, just adventures. I always say experiences over things. A lot of people donate, which is great, but do it throughout the year. Don't just do it at Christmas. A lot of them need hygiene. They need underwear. They need socks. That's sometimes on their Christmas list.
But if they need it for, if they need it for Christmas, they're probably need it during the year.
Boo, and like women's hygiene items, like keep those pantries full. People don't realize how important that is, especially with the age of foster youth who have kids, diapers. I always joked when I had kids, like I should just drive down the street and throw money out the window because that's what diapers felt like. I'm all right. And every time you change a diaper, you're like, oh my gosh, is that $7 for the day? How much money is that? But imagine someone who doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
Like well, you're trying to keep them in the diaper longer than it goes to diaper ration. You know, you have to like mentally think like abundance, like give them more.
Right.
Right. So.
And I think that goes back to the point that you were making that people need to understand the importance of giving.
They get a job, someone will say. And you're just like, have you been in survival mode your entire life?
Yeah.
How do you stay motivated in survival mode your entire childhood? We had one of them tell us, like, I didn't really have a childhood, Mr. And we're like, okay, let's go on a field trip. Let's go have some fun as a kid. Like, it's just not okay. But we can make it okay.
So what would you say is the most important? Like, obviously, the more visibility you have in educating, but what is that message as it relates to helping people to understand the importance of these vulnerable?
I just think we've lost that in this role a little bit. No one does the put yourself in my shoes thing. Nobody does it.
That is such a good point, because I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think in every relationship, too, you know how you'll say, like, you'll show up more as a friend than someone else? Have you really just stopped and been like, have you been that friend listening to you the whole time? You know, like, have you swapped ever, like, just talking to people and just people in your life? Now do it to a stranger. I hate seeing homeless people on the road. It just does. And I hate if people are like, oh, they do that as their job. And this, you don't know that person's story.
Yes.
You know, it just really, the prejudgment and the lack of compassion just in general is heavy.
Yeah. The judgment piece, it's interesting because I haven't really thought about the compassion piece because I get stuck on the judgment. Because for me, this whole idea of people are walking a path that you have no idea. Somebody cuts you off and you always have a choice on what you decide that means. And the more that we can give grace to others because of what they may or may not be going through is just so important and so lacking.
And I often tell everyone, like, everyone's an 8-year-old child that needs a hug because that's what they learn, right? So the teaching someone empathy is like impossible, right? You can't just be like, this is how you're an empath. Like, it just doesn't, But compassion, we all should be born with, and somehow we lose along the way as a child. Mm-hmm. But what we've noticed with foster youth is they're very resilient and they're very guarded. So once the guard comes down, the heart in these kids that we serve, who are older siblings, who haven't gotten to see their siblings in years, who they took care of for years in a toxic environment, when their guard gets down, you are like, oh, I wish everyone could hear your story right now. All you want to do is get presents for your siblings, and they're here and there, and you can't even get to them, and you took care of them for years. No one really sits there and thinks about that. That's what started this mission. I looked at my kids, and I couldn't imagine my 8-year-old being removed from the 2- and 6-year-old sisters, not knowing where his sisters were. And now imagine that if we were in a toxic environment and this 8-year-old took on the role of an adult, took care of these two, and now he's in a car with an adult they don't know, and the sisters are gone. His babies are gone. I couldn't get that image out of my head of how we're okay with that child being okay. And they're just supposed to act right any place they're at. And they're not going to talk back to you. They're not going to try to fight. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to be perfect little kids in a system. Do you know what I mean? It just does. Yeah. That's where compassion comes in, and people lack that.
Well, because I think that for a lot of people, they don't want to feel those emotions.
Oh, yeah. And if it's not happening to me, it's fine.
Yeah.
That also. But it's not bothering me. I don't.
And unfortunately, there's just so much of that going on right now. So much of that going on.
And it's so very heavy. And I often will check it with the kids and just be like, oh, mom read an article. Give me a couple minutes. Because I feel like I get like short tempered. Or you're like, be grateful. But it's hard. And I can't imagine foster youth and kids that are by themselves to be able to compartmentalize that. Compassion. More compassion. You should call this episode More Compassion.
More Compassion. There you go. I'm going to shift gears for just a little bit in terms of just you. And I mean, I know you wrote 2 books.
Yep.
Being Uniquely You.
Uniquely Loved for Being You.
Thank you.
And then Your Labels Don't Define You.
Yes. Define. So I love that. And in your books, it's about self-awareness and accountability and self-acceptance. So how do those principles show up in your work? And I think we probably have already kind of covered that, but I want to make like that connection because those books are so important. The one that's for kids, which is not necessarily just for kids. It's like, you're special just because you're you.
Yeah. It's just affirmations to remind them that all their power is within them. And I originally wrote that when my husband was going through recovery the first time and my kids were 3 and 1. And I just would stare at them and I'm like, gosh, the energy's so off. They probably have no idea what's going on. And then I started worrying about foster youth. And I was like, oh my gosh, they absolutely have pure chaos around them. And they can't just sit and know that everything will be okay and the power's within them. So it all, like,
the power is within them.
Yeah. And all the things are going back to like, don't lose your imagination. Don't stop being you. Look within you. I know your loved ones might be far away, but they, you know, like, it was just reminding them that there's a big world out there, and what they're going through right now is gonna really define the rest of their life. Like, right. I shouldn't just.
And that leads to the other book.
Yeah. And I go through a lot of stages in my life where I either got off track of who I was because of a label, or I felt kind of lost because of a label and judgment. And I think that book really just made me feel good putting everything on paper, because I was doing a lot of speaking events and I was like, I just want to put this in a book. And, you know, I had a couple of people be like, wow, you shared a lot. But yeah, it was so other people felt good to show up as themselves and not be ashamed of anything that they've gone through, because it doesn't define who they are.
Exactly.
I'm defined by where my heart is and who I serve and what I do every day, but like, not that label of being arrested, being a drug dealer, an infertile woman, or like, none of that.
Sure.
But it is, what do I do after that when I've been knocked out a couple of times?
Well, that's a huge part, I think, of what you're helping to show these kids, is that even though they've been in the system, or have I gotten labels based on whatever that was that they were dealing with, that they still have the ability to have their life be different. And you're such a beautiful example of that.
Yeah. And one of our youth was on house arrest with an ankle monitor and kept saying he was going to run away. And he was in our GED program. And I looked at him and I go, listen, you're looking at a felon right now who was able to run this mission and start this mission for kids because that's what I wanted to do. I go, this little moment in time, is it going to define who you are? And he's like, and I talked to him, I answered his questions. And the next day, my educator reached out. She was like, thank you. He showed up today. You know, and it's just like reminding them, nobody's, you know, we show up as adults and they think everybody's perfect.
Exactly. And nobody's really talking about the reality of what they may have gone through. Yeah. The fact that you're able to do that in the way. And you know what's so interesting, Katie, is that, you know, when I look at the whole thing and in terms of like how I look at the world, I just had this moment of going, wow, like you had to go through all that so that you could be the person that you are in this moment so that you can serve these kids in a really powerful way. Because that's really powerful, like to be able to sit down and go, hey, like there was a time when these things happened. Right. Here I am.
And it's good to show up as human for people. And it allows them to show up as human. And instead of that taking him down and him running away and never finishing his, like, now he gets to. And now we get to show up for him.
Yeah. Well, because you showed up for him.
Yeah, of course.
Just to give him a different perspective of what's possible.
Yeah, it feels good. And we're very meet the youth where they're at and everybody's welcome. And I do wholeheartedly feel it has to do with my dad coming out when I was in seventh grade, when I was in a Catholic school. I think it reminded me that people can say they're following or being Christ-like and not by the judgment. Do you know what I mean? So it allowed me to say, oh, I'm going to listen to my heart first and see where your character is, not who you pray to, who you, where you're from or who you love. Like, I'm going to go with character. And that helped me identify my magical unicorns. Do you know, like, it's just, you're right. All of the, that's why I added all those chapters in the book. So people remember when you're at your lowest, it wasn't your lowest. It's just preparing you for the next season.
Yes.
And there is beauty in the mess.
It's hard sometimes.
That's the thing. It's like you can see
because you're not in it, mm-hmm. but by helping them to see that, yeah. that they can't, that's a beautiful lesson because, yeah, even when it sucks, like you still have the ability to kind of take a step back and hopefully know. And the thing is that they don't know because in their world, this is like the most devastating thing, whatever that
forever. And that's another thing we can't, that's why more professionals around the children in the system are so important, consistent professionals, so that they can provide that extra resources they really need.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll go national.
I'm excited about that. So going national might be the answer to one of the
questions.
Where do you see Fostering Hearts in the next 5 years?
Next 5 years, I get to just go around, hug people, shake hands, kiss babies. And I have an amazing team just running the show. And we're building, you know, one might call it like franchise kind of thing, but we're building a template, which there isn't really a template because all kids would meet the youth where they're at, but a template for other
schools. Because the principles of what is important in meeting mm-hmm. them.
The numbers for the U.S. are astronomical for foster youth. So just here, it's like 900 a year aging out just in Florida, you know? So having that, so other states will pick it up and we can expand to other youth. Youth just deserve it.
Absolutely.
And not be like federal budget, state, but they put too much red tape around it. Like, no, we need an Uber gift card to get this kid transportation today. Like, I don't want to have to ask for permission. We're just doing it.
I love it. Do you have any aspirations for figuring out how to help the system be better just in terms of that?
Yeah. So I have ideas, but I'm not putting any effort towards it until I get a really good attorney in our board because they'll tell you like, this is productive. This isn't like ideas for laws and stuff, but I wouldn't know where to begin on it. But yeah, I've written down a few.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Because I think there's room for improvement, of course. And everyone will sit there and be like, the system is broken. This is okay, great. We'll get a solution somewhere. Yeah. Like fill a gap.
Yeah. So if you could share one message with every youth in the foster care system today, what would you want them to hear? You're special because you are who you are, period.
Self-sabotage is real in the foster care system. Because also, I couldn't imagine my family I'm born into either not wanting you or hurting me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it is. I don't know how to work through that. So that the fact that they've had to do it as a child is heart-wrenching. So you're worthy. Just, I hope they all know they're worthy and capable. Worthy they can have capable. It all. They can have whatever their little heart desires.
Yeah, that all of this, again, it's back to what we were just talking about, that all of this, for whatever that reason is helping them to become who they need to be, which is interesting because what you're doing is providing for them the things that they need so that they can really get that. Because if you are in survival mode and you're 20 and you have 3 kids and you don't have any support, like, what will your life be?
Utilize the resources.
Because they don't get that. They won't get that it can be different.
But yeah, and asking for support is really hard.
Listen, a lot of us asking for support is a little challenging. So one of the reasons for this is that we need more and more people like you.
We're cloning.
I don't know about cloning, but I'm thinking and I'm hoping that when people hear these shows, they go, wow, you know, if they had something that happened that they're wanting to do something, mm-hmm. but they haven't quite figured it out, or they need a little push, or they need words of encouragement. So my question to you is, if there are people who are watching this episode who are interested in helping through a nonprofit, what would you say to them?
Do your research. I went around a lot when I first thought about starting Fostering Hearts and did start it, about what other nonprofits were doing. So I wasn't reinventing the wheel and I could collaborate more and what was needed in the space. So if there's a certain group of people that you want to help, or a certain purpose, like just a mission on your heart, research it first because it could already be happening and you could attach to that mission, right? I'm just like, I'm connecting to Joshua House and Maddie's movement to provide education in these spaces. I don't want to find anything else. And then we move then through their mentorship, through Maddie's movement or things like that. There could be a way you input what you want within another organization. Because I just think if everything's better together. And if we could just see that instead of everything as a competition, life would be a little better.
So many little shifts that need to happen.
Passion, no more competition. But do it. Do it. Do it productively, not where you feel like you're going to get burned out. Ask the experts. I tell everybody, key to my success has been surrounding myself with people smarter than me.
Shut up. But you know, that's a very, very, very smart thing to do.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about nonprofit. Ambie's helped me. Evie's helped me. Jamie, my board chair's helped me. Like, people have helped me. We've been around boards and nonprofits. And so, like, surround yourself with those people so you can learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fun to learn.
It is fun to learn. And it's also fun to be surrounded by people who also have that heart and who want to make a difference.
But don't stop, right? Just do your due diligence so you don't burn out is my advice. Like, do the extra little things of asking around if someone's doing your specific thing that's on your heart or what's the best way to do it. Like, ask the questions. You know, because some people are like, you just started. Yeah, I do put one foot in front of the other every day. And I'm like, here we go. But I also ask along the way.
Right. And you figured out where specifically was the need that felt aligned for you.
Mm-hmm. And education popped up. And there you go. If I can staff teachers the rest of my life, nailed it.
Yeah.
Teachers.
Yeah. They are amazing in and of themselves.
Like, well, you don't have to motivate.
Not even in the foster.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to motivate. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have a purpose-driven heart. And that people are often like, oh, how'd you find your purpose? My purpose is being grateful every morning to the universe, God, my guides and angels. That's what I do. And then the rest is just a season, right? That I share that with everyone else. I'm so grateful for this opportunity and abundance in front of me, and I'm just going to share it.
Well, and you keep showing up.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think I just also want to end with the importance of taking care of yourself. Because you can't do this work and not take care of yourself. And on so many levels, because A, you need it, and B, again, you're modeling how to do it in a way that makes sense. Other people can. Well, thank you. You're pretty amazing yourself. Thank you. I appreciate you so much. And I'm so excited about this journey that we are on, because all the people that I'm meeting that are making a difference are really inspiring me to see where I can, you know, be of service also. Mm-hmm. So this is one piece of it, but I'm excited to be involved in it as well.
I'm excited too.
So thank you, my friend.
Thank you for being here today. I hope this conversation reminds you that your presence, your gifts, and your purpose really matter, that you can create meaningful impact. If you want to continue to be supported and inspired, please make sure to follow this channel and tune in each week as we continue to explore what happens when you live intentionally and from your highest truth. Until then, my name is Maite Dusso. Go out there and inspire your best life. And remember that the world needs the impact only you can make.